Things like that.
No, go straight ahead. And I think, as I just mentioned earlier, I think they're an incredible gateway, another use of that phrase, a gateway into literature for a lot of reticent readers then. If you've got your classic 12-year-old lad, there's a girl as well, that's like, reading more, reading more. If you can sort of approach them with the comic and say, yeah, but look at this, and it might only be starting off with Beano, Dandy, etc., the smaller ones, but the scope for growth there is huge. I mean, I know I introduced a moment to a lot of the Shakespeare ones that have been written as mangas.
The manga Shakespeare.
And then say, from that, you can then start to crowbar the actual, you know, the real thing into it as well. It's the great physical gateway. It is a bit really. And outside of that as well, there's still this very much approach that comics are only for children, they're only this very childish medium, very simple, very. And I've had more sort of emotive moments through comics and the subtlety and the delicacies that can be captured in a picture. That's very, very, even if it's just a simple comic picture as well, that you can't quite get from a page then. You can't quite. So it is, it's a whole other medium there, it's a whole other. And I was passing that around just to show off that I can see the coming of age again when you can get them on a tablet as well, because they look, to me, they're just perfectly set up. This, I mean, I did actually want to bring this one in as well. This is Kill Shakespeare, which is better than it sounds, actually. What the authors have done, people have sent it around, is to take every Shakespeare character and shove them into one story. So the idea is there's a wizard called Will Shakespeare who's controlling this land, and Hamlet has been assigned by one of the King Richards to try and kill Will Shakespeare. So, and he's meeting up with Juliet, who's helping him. And all, I mean, I'm not a big Shakespeare fan, but all the characters involved in it are, obviously they're referencing the original Shakespeare's there, as well as its own plot. It also ties in with the actual theme from Shakespeare as well. So that's, I mean, to me that's a brilliant mashup of it, and showing you how it can be done there, where you can start kids off on them. There's nothing. You don't have to know anything about Shakespeare to appreciate that, because there's a scene in it where a guy stabs another guy with a knife and it's really bloody and gory. And there you can start to lure kids in with that. And then from then, hopefully you can spin up on that, going, right, well, what was his character? What did Hamlet do? Where was he? Why has he got this? And then you start to get developed to see that Shakespeare can actually be reasonably interesting there. That's a bit harsh, that, but you know what I mean? From a 12, 13-year-old kid who almost feels that they shouldn't like Shakespeare, you know, that, oh, no, I couldn't like that, none of my mates like it. Well, actually, no, there's a lot of blood, guts and gore in it, there's a lot of bums and seats, if you know, there's a lot of that sort of approach to it.
Similar thing, like, when I was 13 at school, we did Romeo and Juliet, it was really, really boring. Then we watched the film, it's like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Like, I guess it's comic is like the same way, it's like a different medium that might engage people a bit more.
Even if it's a start, I mean, films are a fantastic example of that, where if a kid's not getting the story, let them watch the film. If nothing else, if they do watch the film, they'll get used to the names, because sometimes the names themselves, fair enough, Shakespeare's not too bad, but there are plenty of ones there where it can, just how to pronounce them, and if every time you come to a name you're struggling over it, whereas in a film you've not got that, you know, you can get used to the names and get used to a bit of them, and then when you do start reading it, it's just that little bit easier there. And I don't think we should be afraid as sort of librarians as such as using these tricks. And in that, it almost seems a bit underhand there. But really, you know, any hook that you can get into an unwieldy reader, it's got to be worth it. It really, really has. The Kill Shakespeare one is just one example. There are actual, as I say, direct conversions of Shakespeare plays and everything. All the Agatha Christie's have been done, all the Dickens, that you can guarantee something. And that's not including the manga interpretations, which are their own sort of their own whole ones as well, there where that's been taken up by the manga artists and building. So it is, I'm quite happy to use that, and I do read them myself. You know, I'm a big comic book there, and I think now more so they are getting a bit more information. We're not using The Walking Dead, which is another really big TV show that's coming through from the 70s, and then that's gathering momentum. Started off, and I say started off, it's still going in the comic, it's still in existence, it's still very much in the beginning of its run. And I think maybe the idea that comics are easy is another one that needs to be dispelled there. Walking Dead, for example, is, I think they're up to about 120 issues now, and if you can persuade a kid to stick with a story for that long and be with the same characters, then he's getting, you know, a better ability to stick with it. They're not just necessarily after a short, you know, short. He can start get stronger at dealing with bigger plots, and labyrinthine is the only word I can sort of describe them there. I know that you were saying you've not quite managed to get into them, and it's...
I feel like this is my secret shame.
I
used to read the Beano and the Dandy when I was a kid, and then sort of fell out of the habit. I'm a voracious fiction and non-fiction reader, but recently I've been trying to get into comics, and I've tried like Watchmen, which is meant to be the, but I just, this is it, I couldn't get into it. So what I found, there's a Doctor Who Star Trek crossover, so two of my favourite things, and it was alright. I read it on my phone tablet, and I don't know, I kind of get the feeling that they're not for me, but then I feel bad. It's like if someone says, well, opera's not for me or ballet's not for me, it's like, well, you just haven't tried, you haven't found the right one. And so one question I did want to ask is, and this betrays my ignorance slightly, is, are comic books physically strong enough to handle being lent out again and again? I mean, are they sort of, like, slightly more robust? Because the thing is, I remember the Dandy being, you know, it's four pages stapled together and it tears very easily. Yeah. And Watchmen seem to be printed on very fine paper. So are there comics which are suitable for library lending?
Hardback editions, there.
Sorry, to show my ignorance, a graphic novel is a comic, is it? Because that's what we've been calling libraries, graphic novels.
This is what we were debating this very much. it came about because people didn't, they thought there was, again, it's, which is a wrong in itself, but it's not mature enough. A comic is seen as, but a graphic novel, if you take a bit more seriously. It's
with low notes, the comics are reference only, you see.
Yeah. And you call them trade paperbacks and you work in the comic shop. Because they're all comics, but the difference between floppies or comics and trade paperbacks. So that's kind of what like the industry.
Yeah, describing them as that.
Okay. Yeah.
But I mean, even in that in itself, that there is, and I think that does show something where people wanted to get away from the idea of, you know, the comic as a to be taken more seriously. And whereas the rest of the world never seemed to have a problem with that, speaking specifically for Japan and a lot of Europe as well, where in Italy and France, where a lot of the adult comics are incredibly adult, are very graphic as well, to use another word there, explicit in language and image as well, and brilliant stories, really, really in-depth stories that you can really get a hold of. And again, you know, it's not just for kids there. I think that's maybe part of the problem, is that this is what I'd like this to do, is to get away from that. Because there are still a lot of people who still see comics for kids, and it's the end.
So should they be shelved with real?
Ooh.
But I'm not saying...
This is the thing that really annoys me. Comics in libraries makes me annoyed in so many ways. When they just shove it on the shelf. No organisation.
Yeah.
If you don't know where to start, that's just so difficult.
Death of Language is really bad series. They have two. They've got a good selection. But the way that they shelve it, they have two graphic novel sections. One is teen graphic novels, and one is graphic novels. And actually, stuff that I would expect to be in the adult graphic novel section is in the children's section, and stuff that I would expect to be in the children's section is in the adult section. And it's, I find it difficult if I, for instance, and I get that it's not high art or anything, but if I would like to read like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer comic, that I have to wander into a very, very obviously zoned off children's library to pick that up.
Yeah.
I feel a bit dodgy walking in.
I've
not actually, and I should.
You should do it, because I think that I think quite a lot of it is just education, isn't it? I think maybe they just don't have the skill set to do it, and I think all of that feedback around evolution, so all that feedback is just really, it's really useful. I think.
Yeah. So are you saying that it shouldn't be a comic book section at all?
I think in terms of logistics, they probably should be, because
now that we've got it right, I think.
Tell us what Lambeth do. We know some of the words for that, but we're pleased to hear this.
At Canada Water especially, they do have a teen section, they do have a kind of adult section, but what they've done, which makes me so happy, put Marvel together, put DC together, put Image together. And of course.
You don't like that?
No. What I'm impressed with...
That's how comic book stores do it.
...is the amount of time that it would take to do that, and I'm guessing that they've got a librarian there who's pretty keen on it.
I spoke to them, I went and spoke to someone, and they were like, yeah, we've got someone who's really into comics, and I was just like, I can tell.
I'm a Lewisham resident as well, but I walk up to Canada Water because it's organised better. And they do the same...
I come all the way from Hendon to
they do the same thing. They have a graphic novel section and a teen section, but if anything is going to be in the teen section, they double up the acquisition so that it's in both sections, so that you don't have to think, oh, is this a teen graphic novel or an adult graphic novel?
All you need to do is go into a comic book shop and see how they do their comics. Yeah. Talk to someone in a comic book shop, and it's not that difficult to put everything by the same publisher together, because that's how people do look at comics. And do it alphabetically, like you do all of your other books.
Yeah, you
it's not that long. Difficult.
May I speak in defence of public university? A little bit, really.
Can I just get a sense of where everyone is from in this group?
Public library.
So your children's library?
Public library. Do everything, really, yeah.
So you're public library?
No, academics.
I was really interested who...
Who's academic and library not. I wrote my dissertation on comics. I'm very passionately into comics. Yeah. It's a hobby. I want to be a teen librarian, really. Well, I think I do.
Public library.
Yeah, I'm academic slash health.
Because let me speak from my library. So we've got three different graphic novel sections. Mm-hmm. One in the children's library, one in the teen library, the young adult library, and one in the adult library. And that stuff arrives shelf ready from our supplier. We don't do anything with it. We just cannot. We're not allowed to touch the catalogue or anything. So we just have to put out what we are selling. We just presume that it's age appropriate, that someone has, you know, vetted it all. No, it comes from Askews, because we're in a contract where we buy from. We're part of the central buying consortium. So we don't have any, we can't go and decide where we go and buy stuff from. So there's not going to happen. And I suppose because things are not very clearly labelled, it is very difficult sometimes to do what you want to do. There will not be anything on the spine for the author or anything like that. So it's very difficult to shelve it. But if you think that's the right way to do it, I mean, by publisher, and that is normally clearly marked on it, that it's a Marvel comic or whatever, then I can try and start doing that.
That's how a lot of comic shops do it. They don't always, because Forbidden Planet shove everything together and then do it alphabetically. But lots and lots of places.
Because I just need to make it easier for my staff so they're able to get this stuff away. And then obviously it is easier for people to find it, which is what we want. Because the easier it is something to find, then it's going to be issued. And that's what I want. I want these books to be there, to be borrowed, not...
It's much quicker just to put all the Marvels together, even if you leave the alphabets out. You know, you've got a chunk of those, chunk of the other. And also the public then just zone in.
The consideration, I think, as well, is it's really easy for us all to say, oh, just do it the way that comic shops do it. But as you say, because you're getting them in from a supplier and you're just using the metadata from them, cataloguing comic books is really difficult because they're multi-part serials or and to the point where I think a lot of public OPACs do end up being they get a lot of the bibliographic data from the suppliers, and it's usually quite faulty. And I've gone into places where I've searched for something on the OPAC and I've been looking for something, and their OPAC has said, oh, we have the collected volume of this, so like we have volume 8 of this, and I'll go in and say, I'd like volume 8 of this. And the person at the desk will just say, we don't have that. Because it's been wrongly marked up. And so what's on catalogue doesn't actually correspond
to
what's
in shelves. And remember, there's no catalogue or in-house anymore.
Yes.
No. That's all done.
Exactly.
And we have to rely. So it would be cheaper for us to say, okay, we might have it might be on the shelf, but we can't find it, and we'll order it in.
Yeah.
That is cheaper to do that and have another copy.
And more than that, a lot of graphic novels don't have the same, they don't have the traditional kind of title page that a book would have and that a cataloguer would be used to, so it's...
I work in an academic library, it's an art library, a lot of arts libraries, and we get a lot of graphic novels and comics in for the students, and when we catalogue them, like, the cataloguing, it varies wildly between, like, because I can catalogue a comic book because I know how to, I know what to look for, I read them myself, but if somebody, one of the other cataloguers does it, they have no idea, and you pull up the record, and it's like,
there's no way of retrieving that record, is there, when someone searches for it? That's
no, because like it's completely, you know, what it is and what is on the record, they just wouldn't match up. And if someone was looking for it,
titles, subtitles, subtitles. But I think it's a real market, and that's what pains me, is to know that. I mean, I said Walking Dead. If you can get somebody in to Walking Dead, you can get like hundreds of issues out of, and I mean, but issues out, and with a lot of the mangas as well, which are broadly, I think they're pretty much 50-50 split, male female. It's no longer, I mean, mangas more than a lot of the you know, your hardcore Marvels and those ones. There's a lot of interest from the girls as well in the mangas. They're obviously quite cutesy, quite appealing as well to them, and not just pitched out, but the desirable. And if you can hook a kid in there for a couple of issues, and you know that the whole thing is like a couple of hundred issues long, then as well as the exploring more complex storylines and getting to go, you've got your issues again, which is, you know, meat and potatoes. It's that stats again there that you are. So it does work. It can really, really work for libraries if they put a bit of effort into it and in promoting it properly. As opposed to, I mean, I know most of my lab students are over there. I get really frustrated when I see Simpsons in as adult.
Yes, that's what I've seen, actually. That's the example that I've seen.
Simpsons is an adult. And yet, that's seen the same as one of the incredibly explicit Japanese mangas, saying, like, how the hell's this got into the libraries? And a lot of times, it's bulk buying. It's like, right, well, let's get this. And then you look at it and you go, wow. I didn't think that would be allowed in a library there. And yet it's treated the same as The Simpsons. So there are real difficulties there, and I think the libraries do struggle to...
I was just going to say, I work in a school library and I had a real problem attracting my pupils to graphic novels. It's weird, they work better in the junior school up to age 13.
Yeah.
So I was hoping to have some recommendations. I mean, I've got, like... Watchmen, I've got a couple of others, but I'd really like to know some kind of something that doesn't have 200 issues, because I don't want to outlay that amount of cash to begin with.
Yeah.
But to have a good range of things, a quality, and I can attract people. Yeah. It tends to be the geeky types who read them, and then the sort of your regular people doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, is that wrong?
Because I used to work in a comic book store, so I see who reads comics, which was really interesting, because I definitely went in, like, started the job with preconceptions.
That it was going to be.
Exactly, I thought I knew what it was going to be. And then you get this 6-foot black guy with the immaculate clothes, perfect cornrow, big pile of Hulk comics. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So, there is...
They're not all the Big Bang Theory, that's what you're telling us.
No, absolutely. Looking at them, you would not think they were reading comics. And then they'd have this big conversation with you about Marvel. They were really into it.
I'm just looking to grow my market.
I used to work at London Libraries, and when I was working there, we ran a couple of events for London librarians about working with Gosh Comics. So it was the sort of stock you might want to start off with, and they gave us some really good stock lists. I don't know if I've still got the information, but I'm sure that Gosh Comics will be able to give you a starting stock list. Here you go.
They actually have a section on their website.
Yeah, Gosh are really good.
Mm-hmm. What did Gosh offer? I've come across Gosh before.
It's a good comic shop. Although I used to work in Forbidden Planet, so it was my competition. Yeah. Still, everyone who worked in Forbidden Planet would be like, yeah, Gosh is good. So you know it's good when the competition are saying it's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I've got contact details there as well, so if you want a contact there, I can...
Again, my sort of experience with libraries is walking into them, not working in them. I've noticed that what Woking Library do is they have big displays as you go in of, these are books which we want you to borrow. So for Valentine's Day, they did mystery books, take home a blind date book. So they'd paper wrap them and said, you'll only find out what it is once you check it out. And when it was Oscars, it was, here are all the books about Steven Spielberg and the things. But I've never seen comics sort of put on that level. I'm wondering if that's a sort of internal bias with librarians.
A lot of it. There's a lot of staff that aren't confident.
Hmm.
And we can go on about, oh, you know, it's rubbish for them to shelve it this way, but you know, if they're not confident. And there's a level of user education that we miss, I think, quite often with working in-house. We don't think about, you know, we may be quite happy and quite good at dealing with stuff like that, but, you know, my Saturday colleagues might not be, my evening colleagues might not be, and we're all part of the same team. So you need to think laterally as well and not just think about the user. I know it's sort of a 360 sort of thing.
It's like you said, Lambeth is pretty good because there's probably somebody on staff who knows what they're talking about. Yeah.
And I think we're getting into the sort of specialist generalist librarian argument that's going on at one of the other ones there, and it is that you've got, this is where you do have the challenge. If you've got somebody who really enjoys comics, then you know, push them towards it. And I mean, I know that we'll be able to order, that we have to do that, but even just being able to organise them better there and to recommend, say, well, you know, you don't want to be putting that one in junior, or... Cause, and it's, I think things like that will put folk up. If you see The Simpsons... If, say, like a 12-year-old lad sees The Simpsons as an adult comic, he might want to read it, but he's going to think, oh, is that all? You know, is that... Whereas if you can do it sort of, you know, maybe differently there. One I've used sort of recently was loads of Agatha Christie's that have been done as a graphic. And the quality of them aside, just the fact that a teenager can think, hang on a minute, I don't know if I used to say it goes far as to say aspirational, but whereas a kid can see something like that, think, wow, you know, grown-ups read this as well, and I can read that as well. Ergo, maybe there are other books that I can that I can use there. And certainly the you know, like the direct Shakespeare conversions. Again, it's a bit. I would love to see, because I mean, personally speaking, I think Why the Last Man, which is another one. Hopefully, they're going to be making a film. Or if they can make a film of it, and there's been lots of those moments, then they're good. For hooking kids, and definitely I've seen that a lot there. Kids will come in, very young kids, and have seen the Spider-Man film. I'm sort of like 4 and 5 years old, and they'll be taking home the biggest, thickest collected edition of it. And you know that they're going to get about 3 pages into go, oh, what are these there? But still, there's that, they are interacting with the library, they are sort of like getting excited about the book there, they're getting genuinely, oh, that's really good. And to see that enthusiasm from kids there is, you know, is refreshing, to say the least. And to see them getting engaged with books, be it comic books or, you know, conversions or whatever. And the film tie-in, as we were saying, you know, when the Oscars are on, whether it's books about Spielberg or whether it is the book of Silver Linings Playbook, or that you can hook as, you know, as a film comes out and you've got all the tie-ins with it. And over the past few years, superheroes are doing really, really well, Marvel and the other ones. And again, you've got that hook there. Kids, if you've got the kid who's a bit of a... You know, not too into reading them. Chances are he does like Batman films. He does like, so use that, and get in there.
Do you do a comic book club, like book groups?
No, we don't. I know some places that do. Yeah.
What Lancashire. Any reason why wouldn't you be interested in running that?
Me myself, I probably would be interested in reading that. Actually, there might be.
Because I think it would be good, but I wouldn't feel confident in running because I've got no knowledge of them. So I'd feel an idiot, really. Finding a member of staff who's enthusiastic.
Yeah,
I have a friend, she lives in Rhode Island, and she's a teen librarian at a public library, and she had never done... she'd read graphic novels, but not manga before, and her library runs a manga club. Because graphic novels, American and British publishers, tend not to be very popular there, but manga is really, really big.
Yeah.
And she's allowed the teen readers to kind of run the direction of that. So she's almost allowed them to educate her and tell her what to buy in, and she's read along with them. So the manga club has been a two-way kind of thing. She lacked any confidence about it, but they've allowed that to grow. So I think that's one way of doing it. Is to,
as
well,
because
I know the girl.
Karen,
yeah.
I'm really jealous.
It's because it's such a, again, it's such mercenary terms there, but it is such a market. If you can tap it and if you can get it right, you can get some really enthusiastic borrowers who are really keen and will spread the gospel as well, and they will sort of go around and oh, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, which is what, you know, a lot of libraries are lacking a lot of the time. There is that excitement about it there, and getting, particularly with that age group as well, with that sort of between 10 and 20 years old. And if you can, you know, to match that up, you've got to be able to win it. Now, that's not to say that it's going to be easy. Or it's not just a case of just get a lot of comics in and graphic novels and leave to it there. They're going to need some direction. They're going to need some, you know, encouragement and time as well there, I think. So it might be years before you can start at one going there. But I think that's the case with most book clubs, really. I think very few book clubs sort of hit the ground running with sort of 20 people there. It's, you know, 3 and 4 people, and then gradually builds and builds and builds and builds. And the opportunities there. I think yourself, I'm continually surprised by how entertaining comics are, how addictive they are as well. It really opened up for me. It might be quite interesting for you. It's not so much the topic as the media. The fact that for me, it really hit home when I started to read them through either a tablet or even on my monitor as well. And also the fact that you can download them really easy. There's loads on Pirate Bay. And you can just... One of the difficulties is that they do come out by the monthly. And I'm not very patient with things like that. I like it all now. So I've been able to go back and just grab an entire volume of the whole lot of it all at once. And then literally like within a couple of days go through maybe 60, 70 issues. And come out of it slightly shell-shocked at the end of it. I mean, I did Transmetropolitan. I know other people who go, oh yeah, it's so good, it's so. But being able to just do that all at once, it was like, yeah, really, really impressive. There you go, that's one word. Transmet, which is Warren Ellis.
That's what I should start with then.
It's good. If you think Huntress Thompson's good, then you should start with it.
There's a lot of pop culture that's thrown into there and mashed up into it, and incredibly relevant. Really. I mean, it's based on a mix of sort of Hunter S. Thompson, Bill Hicks, and probably a Judge Dredd as well thrown in there. But when his main weapon is a bowel disruptor, you know that you're going to get people interested in there. You know that you're going to get shot by that. You just immediately lose all controls of your bowels, and that's his central weapon. He does manage to cover so many bases there, and I particularly use the bowel disruptor because it's very childish. It's very, very comic-y, it's very Beano-y, it's very Viz Farty. But then mixed in with some of the ideas that he then brings up, that it's sort of very, you know, transhuman ideas there that are really far-fetched sci-fi ideas, that again, if you're using that to sort of excite kids and to get them interested in there, there's a hell of a lot that they can, you know, to move on to from that. And of course now with tablets as well, I think for me they really, it works well in a tablet form, it works well in that. But I'm quite happy with e-readers anyway.
Is that something, because I know you're talking about reading them on monitors, so having a digital comic collection already on your library PCs could be one way of. Or, I mean, you probably can't loan out tablets, but maybe have tablets in libraries?
I mean,
I don't know.
There are places that do loan out tablets. There are libraries that have looked into that loaning out. And I'd love to see more of it, whether it's, you know, financially, whether that's viable or not. But, I mean, there are plenty of free comics as well. You can go online and find. And we're getting back to more sort of software to actually view the comic. You need a comic viewer. Which again, you're going to have problems with your IT guys, and it's not compatible with this.
Can you not? You don't get kind of ebook comics
that
you can loan.
Yeah, Overdrive does. I've certainly seen graphic novels on there. Obviously, they're harder to read on black and white e-readers.
Yeah.
But if you've got a tablet which is full colour,
we have an iPad project, so all the 13 year 9s get thousands.
Yeah, I don't think Overdrive works with iPad. I might be wrong on that, but
some
does it. Oh, okay, some.
Yeah, some.
Oh, well, right then, yeah.
Just to be
it's
just
irritating.
To
Overdrive is irritating.
We'll back to
it's
that
irritating.
One again.
I said nothing.
Yeah,
no,
I said nothing.
I was going to ask another question. So, could you show theoretically a graphic novel comic in, say, periodical magazine, which are quite popular in your library, in a way that books aren't so much, and just put them out every month to change over, so that people who come, and we get kids who are like flicking through Rugby World and then you kind of start putting them into the consciousness. I'm just thinking about ways that I can kind of start pushing them out. I don't know whether that would work.
What we have at the con-
college library I work at is a fun zone. It was kind of propositioned by the Foundation Learning, so it's people who are not quite as academic as like the standard A-level base we get. And graphic novels go in there, as well as like easy reader books, and also like magazines as well.
Where it works, I guess, if kids are going to pick it up in there.
The thing is, the graphic novels in there don't get used because they are mostly a higher like literacy level than the users of that section have. It's just because there are pictures in them. So
therefore. And that's another misconception.
Would be very suitable to
I mean, there are some that are suitable, but like. Mouse is in there. Mouse is horrific, but, you know, not horrific. I really like it, but, you know, just the content matter. It's not fun. It doesn't belong in the fun zone. In
story about the Holocaust. Yeah, you'd never think of putting a story about the Holocaust in the fun section, but because it's a comic.
I don't think, you know, whoever put it in there has actually read it before. It's just like mice on a book.
Well, like the Marvel Adventures, which is the kids' Marvel thing. They're really, really, really well written, but they're aimed at kids.
Yeah.
So they're not that difficult, and they're genuinely funny. And I like, there's a big kind of adult fan base of them, but also there's a very strong child fan base because they're written for children without being patronising. Yeah. And they're small as well, which helps, I think. They look less intimidating because they're like that size. Yeah. They're like hand size.
So they can get that on subscription and just change them over every month. So I don't know how you buy them.
I think that one particularly is finished, but you can probably get the entire run of graphic novels.
It's just drool worthy. I'm just thinking about that. They're having one delivered all the time. Oh, they're fantastic.
So I think we have them for it's kind of like Nobrow, who are sort of it's like art.
They're kind of like an indie zine comic
with quite high production values, and then we get them for our graphics illustration sheets. We have a standing order for those.
What was that? No,
they're called Nobrow. They're like a publisher from East London.
Some of this stuff will probably be suitable for kids as well.
Hilderfolk.
Yeah, Hilderfolk is really good. Yeah. Actually, all of that guy's stuff is really good.
Yeah.
Hilderfolk.
It's like published by Nobrow.
It's very kind of classically Euro-like.
Yeah, it's very like, Scandinavian. It's really, really beautiful.
What I'm kind of interested in there, actually, especially if you're buying graphic novels for a school, what's the how do you decide what's age appropriate? Like, what's the cutoff for what you wouldn't? Because you've got Watchmen in the school library, for example.
Yes, we have, and I have got film, but I've got the graphic novel because I still think it's a great novel because we deal so much. So our kids are 13 to 18. So we don't have a problem of having 11 and 12-year-olds, which a normal secondary school does. So I think from 13 you can start to be more open. And I don't actually block anything. I think with Watchmen, most younger children, young people, open it up and they just take one look and they start to wilt at the denseness of the element. So I tend to let everything decide itself. So yeah, I mean, going back to books, because I don't know graphic novels, I don't buy them. I kind of look at them and go, this is really scary and no one really uses them. So I'm just going to park that. But then these things like The Other Belinga by Philip Gregory, which is a book which looks lovely, it's full of sex. I never realised. So our libraries are full of things which are chock full of sauciness.
This is what's interesting is because Richard, you mentioned Why the Last Man earlier, and I think it's a fantastic piece of work, and it's really thought provoking, and teenagers probably should read it, but. It has an entire story arc where for four issues, all of the imagery basically is panel after panel after panel of bondage.
Yeah, when you're it's suitable for children.
It's not, it actually ends up being more than that. It ends up being a really beautiful story about like mental health and it's very interesting, but because on first view it's
It is difficult. I mean, we have Game of Thrones, which I have slight issues with, because I'm not a comic reader. And again, I'm like, and so I would probably put that in the sixth form section. But we've got year nine kids reading it that their parents have given to them. So I tended to think, perhaps I'm slightly more cautious than your average parent out there. So I possibly would bondage.
my mum would never let me watch a film with swearing in it, but on the other hand was encouraging me to read Stephen King. And we would discuss
it.
Because I was the same as that, I found teenage books too limiting. I just didn't see the point in them. It was just like, yeah, it's longer, but where's the good stuff? Where's the exciting stuff? And I think that's maybe one of my worries about comics and graphic novels being used too much, is that one of the appeals of them is that they will be able to appeal to those kids who want to rebel by, you know, not reading. And if you take that rebellious edge away from comics, then you almost sort of, you're losing, you know, the appeal that they do have, of like the outsider, of the, ooh, we're a bit controversial, we're not quite on. And that's one of the reasons why kids like them, is because the mum doesn't. You know, they want to read it because mum doesn't, like, oh no, it's not proper, it's not, I want you to read, you know, this, you know,
Treasure Island.
All
ours
are
in the adult, ours are supplied by Forbidden Planet, and they're all in the adult section, but we let teenagers have them on the sly.
how do libraries, I was obviously a goody two-shoes and I never tried to borrow anything stronger than like a Judy Blume when I was a kid. So I mean, if
wrong with
no, I'm sure. But you know, if a kid comes to the front desk with Lady Chatterley's Lover or something like,
oh, no,
well,
Lady
all right. Oh, that's classic now.
Yes, well,
please. Oh no, okay. But if someone comes up with something which is very definitely an adult book, does the librarian say, "Not for you, sunshine"? Or
I had to have a letter from my parents saying I was allowed to read books out of the children's...
You have children's tickets, young adults' tickets, adults' tickets.
So
it depends on the policy of the library.
So there's potentially that issue with comics as well, then?
It will stop it. Well, no, yeah, there is, but...
If they're classified,
Everything I buy should be suitable, but there are kind of problems with sixth forms are different from middle schools, and... I think probably what I'd like to do is I'm looking to get a new library next year with a sixth form section... And and then everyone's section, so store things upstairs and maybe have a bit more edgier stock. Maybe that can encourage the sixth formers to read these are only for you because they must go for the younger kids.
Do you let them choose the stock?
I'd like them to choose more. I ask what they're reading, but they are a bit dull with their reading habits, kind of games. And I don't know, people are very reluctant to admit they're graphic novel readers. It tends to, it's really odd, it's very conformist school, it's very, everyone does the same thing, and they're very good and well behaved, and it's difficult. I think I'd like to grow it more, and I'd like to know more about it. But this is the thing, is there someone when they say the entire series, out of this entire series, these four comics really are a bit dodgy, the rest of the series is...
Well. And I think it then comes down to what you were talking about the library staff having the skills themselves. Because at the moment I'm reading through Fables, which is a really great comic series based on. It reminds me of the Kill Shakespeare idea, basically, where somebody's taken all of the fables and fairy tales and folklore and stories and kind of thrown them all together and moved them into the real world. But it's quite an adult storyline dealing with children's stock characters, and I'm on the third or fourth trade paperback at the moment, which is called Storybook Love, and the front cover is all like nice hand painted, and it looks quite twee and you know, vaguely seedy potentially, but you open it up and halfway through Goldilocks has been introduced, and she's a gun-toting violent revolutionary who's encouraging people to overthrow capitalism. She's murdering people on the sly. She ends up getting an axe through her head,
and she's sleeping with baby.
And she's sleeping. She's sleeping with one of the three bears. I mean,
with animals.
Bruges.
But this is the thing. If it was to go across a library desk and a librarian hadn't read it, they would think it was something very different to what it actually was. And I err more on the side of allowing people to read whatever they want to read, but at the same time, obviously there are limits. And you don't, if you're working at school, you don't want a parent coming in and saying, "Why have you allowed my child to read this horrifying bondage comic or something ridiculous?"
It is difficult. I think if you limit to sixth form, that's a way to do it. I mean, I bought a novel which has got kind of graphic elements called Chopsticks. It looked lovely, it sounded great, mixed media, all different things, and then you open up and there's a page where it just goes fuck, 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 just kind of sitting there going, oh.
What am I?
Has anyone had any experience of using them with a reading group if they want to read?
I was discussing that earlier, but I think there's a couple of groups around about time. So, comics reading groups.
You think with reluctant?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm trying to sell comics as, is that hook to reluctant readers there, because it does still have that anti-establishment, that's still sort of like a bit rebellious, a bit. And if you can get them to, I mean, I'm much of an opinion, if you can get kids to read anything, I've never yet seen a kid physically injured by a book. You know what I mean? I've never seen a kid read something and go, oh! They might be exposed to things that they're a bit too young for, or whatever, that. But there's a lot worse stuff out there than the worst things in books there. And seeing that a lot of people that I do know have read things like Stephen King, quite young. And that, it's weird that my mum would be horrified if she thought I watched The Evil Dead when I was like the same age, but I was reading, yeah, Stephen King's far more graphic. And far more challenging, and far more, you need a lot more mature mind to. But I hated it, but I couldn't get it up, and it sort of expanded my reading habits and gave me the ability to read for longer, you know, for longer periods of time, and to maintain that over a longer story as well. So it wasn't just the short stories then, it was much longer stories. And again, graphics just go on and on and on. Why the last month, I think 70 issues. And Fables is 18. Is he still going?
It's still going, yeah. It had a spin-off as well.
Is that a problem for libraries? Because if you think, you know, like the maximum Harry Potter is probably, or, you know, that's seven books, and Terry Pratchett is 30-odd, 35-ish. But if you're trying to hook someone into reading, and the fact that you're committed to buying 70 comics, is that too much of a strain on libraries?
If you can get issues out of it, and if you can show that kids are, you know,
need to earn their place,
yes,
on the show.
Yeah. I suppose if it was just one, you know, if it was just one child. But then again, we'll buy plenty of books in
standalones as well.
Yeah.
But you buy, like, we used to buy 20 bloody Catherine Cooksons.
You know, Daniel Steele.
Yeah, large print westerns.
And then we've also got the problem, I think, particularly with mangas and a lot of the where the library will buy, instead of just buying 20 different first issues, they'll end up buying issue 7 and issue 12 and just random,
so public
random numbers.
That's
of
really
what's
bad.
The point? Yeah. I mean, some of them do work as standalones, but again, if you want to get people hooked into them, it doesn't help to start off at the start there, really. It doesn't help to start off with number one. And
again, Canada Water are really good about that.
Yeah, I was about to say Canada Water, actually. They the end of their shelves, they usually have a few highlighted titles, and they're almost always
the first one.
Or they're like the Marvel Essentials, where it will have, like, select runs.
We need to find out which
member
staff this is, and get him on her to come around and do some training with it.
Yeah. Mm.
But then you end up with things like, I read Doom Patrol recently, which has had multiple runs, and because this is the other thing with comics, is that they will have... there must be about, 10 X-Men titles currently on the run at the moment, and they all use the same characters, but they're different stories, and the characters are different in each of
different
them. They're taken in different universes. So you'll have, in one story, a character will be gay, but he won't be in the other one, and one character will be dead in three stories, but is fine and alive in other ones, and it becomes very, very confusing, and I think it's confusing for readers to start and to know where to start. And again, if readers don't know how...
Well, the readers do like that challenge, though. They enjoy that. They can get that, and they can... It's another... I'd rather see a kid sort of struggle with a bit of a, you know, challenging book rather than just go for the same story again. I mean, Daisy King Meadows is one name that springs to mind there. Just thousands and thousands of the same story. That Jack Frost, if I ever come across Jack Frost, just the same story again and again. And I know kids like repetition, but I also think that is that being challenged? Now, you said earlier, what do you do if the kids come with a book that's inappropriate for them? Generally speaking, I see inappropriate not so much as what the content is, but for how... And I will open a book at a random page, find the most difficult word on the page, and say, what's that word? And if they look at it and go... And not a clue, say, well, do you not think maybe this book might be a little bit too difficult? Let's go and find one that might not be quite as... But it's still challenging. Because I don't think it's if you're just reading it. And then again, I know plenty of adults who come in, and then they frustrate me as well, who just read large print westerns, or just read Danielle Steele, or just read, and they're just reading the same one. And me personally, I like to be challenged. I like to push myself when I'm reading that. I still will have I'll read Terry Pratchett, so that you know that you're going to get your that feel for it, and you can just consume them. But I also like to be challenged. I also like to struggle a bit and go, hey, what's that? And again, graphics certainly do that.
And I think there is that challenge, and I think actually it's really useful for kids to be able to see the same characters in different situations, and to it tests their ability to understand changing narratives and to follow different storylines. But for something like Doom Patrol, for example, I've always been told that it's completely useless to read anything prior to Grant Morrison, and that's the run that you want to read. And or if you're talking about something like Swamp Thing, where it's the Alan Moore run that you want to be reading. So says everyone. If somebody isn't completely au fait with that kind of thing, they might have been recommended, oh, you should read Swamp Thing, and then they might not read.
Go out and buy.
Right, they could end up reading the wrong thing, and then that could end up being damaging, because I think you've probably only got a few chances to hook someone before they say, I've read too many rubbish graphic novels, and I don't want to have to try anymore.
Same with teen fiction as well, then. If a teenager picks up something that's billed as teen fiction, and it's just not enough to it, there's just no meat to it, and what's the point in that? And I think that was my experience, and that's why I ended up.
I didn't read teen fiction as a teen. I read it now.
Yeah, same.
But I look at our teen section, and it just seems vampire-oriented.
No, I don't think I would have liked that thing. There needs to be an alternative. This is the problem with supplier selection, but let's not.
I think the phrase is supernatural romance.
The vampire has a lot of thoughts. There is no dystopian. Everything's being published as dystopian. You're like, I love dystopian fiction. Really, really do.
You want to give them a choice. They can't all like. They don't all like the same thing.
No, and it's just a bit. The other thing I was going to say, I wondered whether, because I'm in a private school, and I wondered whether there's an expectation that children don't read the graphic novel, so they take it home, and it doesn't matter what graphic novel it is, their parents are going to go, what are you reading? Paying X amount of money and fees so that you can come home with a comic.
Maybe give them Mouse, because it has Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yeah, they don't want to read Mouse. Mouse is about as popular as Lady Chatterley's Lover, really, because they kind of look at it and go, it's really dense. It's a really small box. Yeah. It's quite difficult for a reader who doesn't read very much. Mouse is quite, it's like coming to watch me, it's quite hard.
It is an impossible challenge there, where on the one hand, you want the kids, like, as I see it saying that if comics are seen as being rebellious and they can be sold to kids who are rebels, then that's a bonus, that's brilliant. I've finally got them to read something, I've finally got a kid to sit and read an entire book. And that's amazing, you know, it's a little breakthrough there, it's, you know, small victories. But then if you've got equally got problems, well, you're going to be worried about what the parents are thinking, or what other teachers are thinking, or what, you know, other people in general are thinking about. That's a whole other ballgame, that is, and it's part of the impossible job of being a librarian, you know, trying to please everybody all the time. And you just have to make decisions there, and that's if you've got a member of staff who's really into it, then that can make a big difference, and they'll be able to push it in the right way and make the right recommendations, and that it can make the difference between having a reader and a non-reader, if there is such a thing as those two then. I'd love to see more non-readers being engaged with things like graphic novels, or even Daisy Meadows, much as I hate to admit it, I'd rather than read something than nothing. But I'd rather them, you know, read something that is going to challenge them, and that they are going to find a little bit difficult, and get more from, you know, at the end of it. I think we've all had it when we finished a book and, like, gone, oh, God, I've managed it, I've got through to the end of it there. And particularly our young readers there, when they get that sensation that they've surmounted a real challenge there, I think that's really important, and to feel it is a victory for much smaller than another small victory. And it's wonderful to see that with kids there.
I think as well with the adult point of view, because the parents have been the main, in my previous job I was in public libraries, the parents have always been the main ones having the fit. And the argument is, you know, sorry to go down a slightly academic route, is if you say you're developing the pictorial literacy as much as the textual literacy, and it all sorts of come together, and it's still a route towards literacy, however you get there, and learning how to deconstruct an image and the construction of a panel, and, you know, all the visual cues and learning how to read that, it all feeds into this area. So it's sort of undercover literacy, if you need to spin it.
And also to say that they're reading for pleasure. If your child is not reading for pleasure and that is something they will pick up, if they want to foster a reading habit, then, you know, it's an alternative to them sitting in front of, you know, a computer game, not saying there's anything wrong with that all the time, you know. Or,
it's just trying
to
find accepting the face of it. Like Hugo Cabret, the Hugo Cabret book, which is all neural pictures with a bit of text. It's kind of an acceptable form of...
One thing you might want to get in, actually, you probably already have it, is understanding comics. It would be a really good one to like promote to parents more than anything, because I actually read it at university, because I did a module where I studied comics at university, because it can be done academically. And understanding comics, I'd read comics in the past, but it really looks at the way that stories can be told using pictures and the conventions of comics and how the gutter can be used, like the spaces outside of the pictures, and it's very interesting. It really doesn't so much view comic literacy as part of existing literacy. It really sets it out as being its own thing. It really starts from the ground up as a new medium.
If you don't have anyone who knows anything about comics, and you're just like, comics are some weird foreign country that I don't really understand, should you just give it like a wide berth? I mean, if you
chance to publish it,
go to comic shops.
I mean, it very much depends which comic shop you go to, but some people in comic shops will be so helpful. Like, amazing.
They'd be too helpful as well, you'll never get away. You don't want anyone to make it.
But I mean, even when I was working in a comic shop, it was great, because you could be like, oh, I'm in this kind of mood, and someone would be like, read this, or this, or this, or this. People who are like, some of the people in them are so passionate about their jobs, and they will just talk and talk and talk to you.
Yeah.
Like I would. Fair enough, just, yeah.
It isn't that one thing I said about this course session there that I was very wary of it becoming just, oh, brilliant, man, have you read that one? I mean, Transmitter, it's interesting, you see there's a few names, we've got Fables and Transmitter, and while there is there's a real ecstasy about it there. A part of it is because they're underrated. Part of it, I do like that, I do like sort of like the underdog there, and I really do think that comics are. I think they're getting more and more popular, they are getting more and more clatter. But also, you mean you are finding more and more crossovers where Jodi Picoult wrote a Wonder Woman series as well. I mean, she's a... Let's ignore about how poor it was, just the fact that she did do it there. I didn't actually get into it there, but it shows you that there is... there are openings there that can be exploited, that can be found. I certainly don't have a reading the comics. And I think one of the other things that I personally have found is that when you start, you tend to get to the back page and there tends to be other, a smaller advert on the back of it, and you go, oh, that looks really good there. And you will, I mean, I've seen that kids go, can you get this one for me? Can you? As I've done that myself, I've gone through it and I've seen just a brief synopsis of it and goes, oh my god, that sounds amazing, that sounds really, really good. And that can help as well, again, where you've got that moving on from one, keep it going and keep it going and keep it going, maintain the momentum. I'm not saying it should only be comics there, but if it's a choice between not reading or reading comics, I think most adults, most parents would opt for comics there. I think they see that, you know, the value in them. You know, it might be, oh, my son only reads comics there, but again, if it's a choice in that or nothing, or that, or Xbox, or telly, or, you know, just generally messing around there. Because there is a hell of a lot of scope in comics there.
I can't even find them in our catalogue. I've just searched for Fables, and I've just got hundreds of Aesop's Fables.
We were talking about this as well.
And we've got about 25, 30 new, brand new copies, but I can't find them in our catalogue.
Yeah. Because they are hard to... I think that's maybe one of them I said, where libraries don't become... Because they are hard to categorise as well, like what the hell to do with them. Do you put them in with adult there? Do you stop them? I mean, recently, we had an uproar because of this past. We had an uproar among librarians because we merged all our fiction together. So we're the only library to do that. So they think like sea fiction or thriller, crime, and all the random... But, you know, sort of sub-areas that are just about sod that became soldiers, fiction. Got a large print, we got paperback, which is fiction. And we had...
I can't believe you categorised senior fiction.
Oh, Kit Junior, there's Junior Fantasy Horse. our catalogue.
Yeah, it's
almost
time to go.
Whoops!
So it's just a final closing session.
Yes, so read comics.
Thank you.
Yes, very much.
Good.